Hey, you want a party? We could. That's not going to be fun. I'm going to have to figure out how not to do that. Well, we started a pre-Passover series 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we will continue in that vein. And on the Sabbath that I'm away in the Dallas event, the prom and basketball tournament, Mr. Pierce and I have already discussed the schedule, and he will also be continuing in that vein as we come toward the Passover day. That Sabbath, in fact, will only be 8 days before the Passover service itself. And so we want to make sure that you have all the necessary ingredients in your mind and are prepared for that special occasion. Today, though, because we are only a couple of weeks out from the Passover, and or three and a half or whatever it is, we also are only a few weeks out from the days of unleavened bread. And traditionally, probably we spend a good bit of time on the first holy day of unleavened bread talking about unleavened bread and the meaning of it. But sometimes that's too late. That is, we need to look at the whole issue of unleavened bread and what it's about and putting out leaven in advance so that we don't find ourselves suddenly caught in a quandary of what did I do? Did I prepare properly? Did I properly put out the leaven that is in my home and in my life? And what do I do now? And of course, we will continue that theme through the days of unleavened bread, but there's material that we need to think about in advance. I want you to go to a scripture that you're quite familiar with, and that's Deuteronomy chapter 16. Verse 16, and of course, this is a standard place we often turn, particularly at the beginning of the year, to talk about the holy day offerings. I'm not going there to talk about holy day offerings per se today, but rather to talk about what it says in terms of the calendar and the time. Deuteronomy 16:16, three times a year all your males shall appear before the Eternal your God in the place which he chooses. Now, since the feast site brochure is coming out soon, that might be a question as well. What do you mean in the site which he chooses? Remember, at this time, of course, Moses was repeating this to the Israelites before they ever crossed into the Promised Land. And when they crossed into the Promised Land, God was going to choose a location for them to place the tabernacle and then, of course, choose a location for the temple. So if you read this literally to the place which the Eternal chooses, it would have to be one place that God picks out in the Promised Land that they're going to come to worship him. And so it was. Today we use the principle that God establishes the feast sites, and we don't believe that God drags us around the country and says, go here, but rather that God gives us principles and understanding of what the feast site is supposed to do, what kind of environment we're supposed to have, how it's supposed to help us achieve the purpose of the feast. And so we go out and look for venues that fit that, and then almost always we feel that God shows us some special situation or some unique circumstance comes up that says this must be the place. Again, we're not casting lots, and we're not just going out and saying, okay, God, I'm going to let go of the steering wheel, take me to the feast site. We don't do that, but it's still the place God chooses, but it's not the place God chooses in the same way that he chose the one for all of Israel in the Promised Land. So we understand that. So when you look at the feast sites, there's feast sites that men have selected based on what we believe God is doing and where it will serve God's people the best. In many cases, they're practical sites. We have a site, for example, in Central California that probably isn't going to be terribly popular with people transferring in, but it's a site that's necessary for people who can't simply travel away from California. And so we'll have a site there that will be probably a little smaller, but it will be practical for the needs of the people. Well, that's an aside, but let's go on. Because the Eternal your God will bless you in all your produce. I'm sorry, I'm in 15. 16. Before the Eternal your God in the place which he chooses, at the feast of unleavened bread, at the feast of weeks, and at the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Eternal empty-handed. It goes on to talk about the offering. But notice it sets it apart in three times in a year. The feast of unleavened bread, the feast of weeks, which is, of course, Pentecost, as we call it today, and the Feast of Tabernacles. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread is one of the key times. And it includes the Passover and the 7 days of unleavened bread, which include, of course, two holy days, the first day and the last day of unleavened bread. So the days of unleavened bread are something we're told to keep, to come before God. And we have also understood as a church that while in Israel the males represented the family and the head of the household and were expected to go regardless, the rest of the family went whenever possible. And in the spiritual church, people who are members of God's church, in a sense, are responsible for their own spiritual relationship with God. And it isn't always a matter where just the husband can go off and keep the feast and leave the family at home. There are times when families cannot keep the feast, and sometimes it does occur that one member can go and others can't. But generally speaking, we're all responsible now for appearing before God in the place which he chooses, or the place which he establishes as the place to keep his feast. As we come back to Leviticus chapter 23, where all the feast days, including the Sabbath, are listed, once again, we come to verse 6 of Leviticus 23, and it says this, "And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the eternal. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread." So the 15th day of the first month. The previous verse says that on the 14th day is the Passover. So when we keep the Passover at evening, we keep it at the beginning of the 14th day. The feast begins on the 15th day. So the feast begins when the Passover, 24-hour Passover day, ends. So the Passover is on the 14th day of the month. The Feast of Unleavened Bread begins on the 15th day of the month. And of course, we hold at the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread what we call the night to be much observed, what God calls the night to be much observed. Some confusion exists among church members and certainly among in the world for that matter about what that night is. In fact, the Jews to this day keep that night to be much observed as their Passover, as the when they have their Seder and kick off the holy days. They only keep the 7 days without the Passover being separated, but then of course they don't acknowledge Christ and that he died on that day either. So we understand that the 14th day is the Passover, and the Passover is kept the evening at the beginning of the 14th day. That the Feast of Unleavened Bread begins on the 15th day and begins with the night to be much observed, which we keep either at home or with a group of brethren in some public environment where hopefully it is semi-private, at least, environment where we can feast together and acknowledge that we're there on the night that Israel came out of Egypt. I'm just going to give you a few background scriptures here as we start. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus 12, verse 8. We're here in the description of the discussion of the Passover. In verse 8 and on down, he's describing the Passover sacrifice and the eating of the Passover. The blood on the doorpost in verse 13, so that he would pass over their houses. Verse 14, so this day shall be to you a feast or a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. And then in verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. The better translation, perhaps, of the language might be on the first day you shall have removed. When it says you shall remove, it means it's not there. But you don't spend the first holy day of the days of unleavened bread removing leaven. The leaven is removed before that time. So from the first day, in verse 15, on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So it was a tremendous penalty or result of eating leavened bread. It was clear that everybody was supposed to get rid of the leavening. Now, the practical application of that, when you think about these 3 million people living in a tent in the desert, is a challenge. But we're not told how they accomplished all of that. But they did. They had to remove leavening from their homes for that entire 7 days. Verse 16, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation. On the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. So we have services on the first day of unleavened bread and services on the last day of unleavened bread. The church has made an administrative decision because God doesn't tell us how long services have to be or how many services we have to have. We just know that it's a holy day and we're supposed to come before God and we're supposed to worship God and we're supposed to acknowledge His purpose and His plan. So the church has made an administrative decision on the first holy day. We have only one service in the afternoon, primarily because in most cases people have spent a great deal of work and effort and late night in keeping the night to be much observed. And so on the evening beginning the 15th, there is a great deal of celebration on the night to be much observed. And most people appreciate the rest and the recuperation and the opportunity maybe to spend a little time in prayer and study on the beginning of the holy day before coming to the service in the afternoon. So we only have one service in the afternoon. Now, some of us old timers could tell you when we used to have three on a holy day. You have the one in the beginning of the evening and you have two the next day. And sometimes you had one in the evening after the holy day or something of that sort, a Bible study. There were all kinds of things that we did in the early days as we were trying to figure out how to obey God in keeping the feasts. Judy and I first kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread, we lived about 50 miles out of Chicago. The entire greater Chicago region, including our congregation, which was about 100 miles out of Chicago, we were between the two, went into Chicago even for the night to be much observed. And we had a massive hall, like an armory, set up with tables like we do in the back for a potluck, except about 100 times as big. And we had 2,500, 3,000 people, whatever, come together and banquet on the night to be much observed. And the ladies did all the food and all the bread and all everything. And we, in a sense, had to really serve one another. But it was a huge production and took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And in those days, we still got up and had services the next day. Most of us, I will say, were younger in those days, and it wasn't quite as difficult to drive home 50 miles home after the night to be observed. 50 miles doesn't seem like much now, but when you were driving a clunker with no air conditioning in the early 60s, it was a long way. And so we go home and then come back the next day. A few people who really had some money were able to stay over, but most of us were not, and come back and keep the day. My point simply being that we have a holy convocation, but we have one. A convocation, of course, just is that. You convoke a meeting. You bring people together. And so we have a holy convocation on the first holy day, and we have two holy convocations on the second day because we have a morning service and an afternoon service. Notice it also says, no manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone in the New King James, that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So there's provision made for having the activity, for having the meal, for preparing the meal, for eating the meal. You don't do your normal work on the holy day, but you can prepare the food necessary to feast. Verse 17, so you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I don't think I was going to go there right now. We're going to come back to that. Let's go to back to Deuteronomy chapter 16 again. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 2. Well, I actually probably should read verse 1 for you as well. You'll read it anyway. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Eternal your God. For in the month of Abib, the Eternal your God brought you out of Egypt by night. Therefore you shall sacrifice the Passover to the Eternal your God from the flock and the herd in the place where the Eternal chooses to put his name. You shall eat no leavened bread with it, and 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it, that is, the bread of affliction. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt. So there is a direct reference to the coming out of Egypt, which when we study the chronology, we understand Egypt. In Egypt, Israel kept the Passover on the 14th. Then they spent the next day getting ready to go and departed from Egypt, began the departure from Egypt on what we call the night to be much observed, the beginning of the 15th day. And they passed out of Egypt through the days of unleavened bread, crossing the Red Sea on the seventh day, on the last great day, I mean the last holy day, the best we understand the chronology. And again, I wouldn't fight over that, but that seems to be the best explanation that we have come up with in terms of how Israel came out of Egypt. So we have Israel being told, keep the days of unleavened bread, keep them for 7 days, keep the Passover on the 14th, keep the holy day on the 15th, and then keep the last holy day as well, and create a holy convocation to the Lord. So that is what we do. And we're told over and over to put leavening out of our houses. Mark chapter 14, we go to the New Testament. Mark chapter 14. Let's see, we'll begin in verse 12 or so. Mark 14, verse 12. Now on the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, notice, on the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover lamb. When you read in these scriptures, and if you read all of them about the days of unleavened bread and the Passover, particularly in the New Testament, you find that the whole feast is being referred to sometimes as the days of unleavened bread. Sometimes the whole thing is referred to as the Passover. The Jews to this day call the entire week the Passover. But here it says it's the first day of unleavened bread, but it says it's the day when they killed the Passover. So obviously it is a day before the days of unleavened bread, and yet the season is called the days of unleavened bread. His disciples said to him, where do you want us to go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? So it is before the Passover, and yet they're saying it is the feast of unleavened bread. So just so you understand, again, we've talked before about the fact the Bible often gives you a general statement or an outline or an overview, and then gives you details in other places. And such is the case with the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. You have to put all of the pieces, all the scriptures together to understand the chronology and to understand what God is telling us to do. So they were asking him, where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover? So it is the beginning. It's sometime on the 13th before the 14th begins, because they're going to eat the Passover when the evening comes and the 14th begins. But they are preparing for him to eat the Passover. And of course, Christ ate the Passover. And in this case, we have specifically the place where he chooses. If you want to look at the rest of the story, he sent out two of his disciples and said to them, go into the city, and a man will meet you carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him. Wherever he goes in, say to the master of the house, the teacher says, where's the guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples? Then he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There, make ready for us. So Christ had already worked this out, apparently by miracle. They were with him most of the time. He didn't seem to have gone and made these business arrangements on the side. This is a miraculous arrangement that he has inspired this man to do, so that in effect it's already prepared. Just an interesting aside in the context of wherever God will choose to place his name. He clearly had already figured out where he was going to place his name for this particular Passover. In Exodus chapter 23... Exodus chapter 23. Sort of surprising as you start looking into it and studying it how many different places the Passover and the days of unleavened bread are discussed in various contexts throughout the scriptures. I'm not even going to get to a number of them today. But we come back to Exodus chapter 23 to pick up a particular section in verse 14, where once again he says, three times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days. This is in parentheses. And as I commanded you at the time appointed in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt, none shall appear before me empty. The translators properly put that in parentheses because it's a reference to the feast of unleavened bread. Then it goes on, and the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labors, which you have sown in the field. Again, the day of Pentecost, and the feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. Three times in the year all your males shall appear before the eternal God. So again, God makes it clear that he's laid out the feasts. They are the feast of unleavened bread, the feast of weeks, and the feast of tabernacles. Now within that, of course, you have the addition of the Passover service itself at the beginning of unleavened bread. You have the last great day attached to the Feast of Tabernacles. And when you put all of the holy days together, of course, you have the complete picture of God's plan of salvation. But it's only in those three time periods, and as we understand it, to be three seasons in a year. Now, some people want to be very literal in the way they read certain things in the Scripture, and oftentimes they are literal to the point of disagreeing with what they've been taught or what the ministry says. I don't like to go there, never have. I'd have to be very, very clearly shown that something I'm doing is wrong, that I was taught by the church, especially by Mr. Herbert Armstrong years ago, from which most of our knowledge still is colored by his influence and his understanding during the time that God was calling him. But I mention this just to say that I don't know what I mentioned to say. I'll tell you in a second. I knew there was a reason I went to the seniors brunch, because I was planning a senior moment here in the afternoon. That is really strange. I was thinking of an aberration that some people like to... Oh, I know what it was. Three times in a year. When we go back, and I'm not going there, to Deuteronomy 16:16, and it talks about appearing before me and not appearing before me empty. There are people who will not give their holy day offerings on the seven holy days because they believe they only should be given three times in a year. You know, that's their business in a sense, but that isn't what the church has taught and understood. When you come before God on a holy day, and he's very specific about some of the holy days that you bring an offering, we just assume that you should do it on all seven holy days. And so we've always taken up an offering on all seven holy days. We don't take an offering on the first day of unleavened bread and skip the last day, or take an offering on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles and not take one on the last great day, or vice versa. We take up an offering on each of the seven holy days. But again, one reading this literally, unless he's willing to accept the principle of three seasons in a year, not just three specific dates, but three seasons, the season of unleavened bread, the season of the Feast of Weeks, and the season of the Feast of Tabernacles, which clearly has to include the last great day, you would not be able to, he could come to the conclusion that you should only give an offering three times. I suppose if that's not an attempt to negotiate with God and only bring 3/7 of what you would bring otherwise, that might not be such a problem. But on the other hand, I prefer not to think of it that way or do it that way. So we take up an offering on each day of the feast. Back to chapter 13 of Exodus. Chapter 13, verse 6. Verse 13:6, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Eternal. Now, you're already eating unleavened bread, and that is in a sense a feast of unleavened bread, but you're having a special holy convocation on the seventh day. Shall be a feast to the Eternal. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Now, the carnal mind would say, you've quit preaching and gone to meddling. There shall be no leaven seen with you in all your quarters. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And he goes on to say, you tell your son this is because what happened when we came out of Egypt. So the clear symbolism is present there. And of course, we understand today that coming out of Egypt is also symbolic of coming out of sin. So it all ties together as God shows us what his plan and purpose are. So how do we accomplish that with not just not eating leavened bread, but not having leavened bread in our quarters? See, there are people who think, okay, I can go all week without eating leavening, but are you saying I should get rid of my leavening? I should get rid of my bread, I should get rid of my crackers, I should get rid of my baking soda and my yeast, and I have to start over after the days of unleavened bread? That's exactly what I'm telling you. That we have to get rid of the leavening and get it out of our quarters if we're going to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread properly. It's not just a matter of only eating unleavened bread. It's a matter of not having leaven present in our environment, present in our lives. You're not going to be able to avoid having leavening somewhere in your environment or in your vicinity. You probably can't avoid walking down the street without passing a place that just inside the window somebody's eating a donut or a Reuben sandwich or whatever it is you might be eating. You probably can't ride the bus to work without the guy next to you carrying a peanut butter sandwich, if anybody still does that. Everybody in my family liked peanut butter except Grandma. She drove a Chevy. All right, in chapter, never mind, we'll figure that out later. Exodus 34. Exodus 34, verse 18. The feast of unleavened bread you shall keep. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you in the appointed time of the month of Abib, or Aviv, as the Hebrews would say it, in the month of Aviv, for in the month of Aviv you came out from Egypt. So again, it's tied directly to coming out of Egypt, and it is to be kept. This is not God saying it would be a nice thing for you to do. He's saying, keep the days of unleavened bread. When we first tried to convince Dr. Samuel Bakayoki of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, one of their premier researchers and writers, that the holy days needed to be kept, he's dead now, but he was a great defender of the Sabbath day, but he couldn't understand the holy days. And we tried to explain them to him. He finally went and studied them, and he came back with a book to the Seventh-day Adventists that explained that the holy days were a nice picture and that they should be aware of this picture that's in the Bible. You don't keep the days of unleavened bread. You don't keep the Passover, but you should be aware that it's in there. I'm putting words in his mouth in a sense, but that's sort of the way he presented it, that it's not anything we have to do. They're not really holy days. They don't have to be kept completely, but they are nevertheless a picture of what God is doing in the plan of salvation. So over and over and over again, I've repeated the same thing many times just to show you that over and over and over again, God says, keep the days of unleavened bread. And he also says, there shouldn't be any leaven in your quarters. And that becomes a challenge for some folks. Let's go to Galatians chapter 5 and we'll see why that's true. Again, remember, we're looking at a spiritual principle that leavening is a type of sin, that coming out of Egypt is coming out of sin. We haven't gone to the New Testament passages that talk about leavening being a type of sin. We'll probably do that on the holy day. But in the meantime, we're looking at a picture of coming out of Egypt, coming out of sin. And God says, put out the leaven to remember that you came out of sin. And we find out later in Christ's teachings that that leavening is a type of sin. Galatians chapter 5. Just a quick principle thrown in here, a spiritual principle that Paul makes available to us, Galatians chapter 5, verse 9. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Now that's all that says. But if you put that together with "there shall be no leaven seen among you in all your quarters," you realize that God is saying, you want to be completely clean. You want to be completely clear of leaven. You want to be completely out of the picture of sin that leaven creates. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Now that comes into play when you start talking about what is leaven and what you put out. People get all upset because some people might whip up egg whites or something and put them in a baked item because it is leavening. Because now the baked item, instead of being flatbread, and by the way, lots of flatbread, including wheat thins and things that we take for granted, often have leavening in them. But because it's not flatbread, but is perhaps a little thicker, we say, ooh, sin. But you see, egg whites don't leaven anything. Because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And it's hard enough to get egg whites to puff up whatever it is you're baking to start with. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. The leavening is a creeping, pervasive element that spreads like sins through a congregation. It happens in one corner, but it fills the whole room. Leavening put into the dough is going to find its way through all of the dough. A little leaven leavens the whole lump, Paul says. So when we talk about what is leavening, and we describe the elements of leavening, that's important. I like my new computer. Finger light. Thank you, Susan. Didn't think to bring this with me this morning, but thought about it beforehand and asked Susan for some help. I actually had to call Mr. Horchak on my phone and ask him to email this to me because it's in my other email account that I can't get to from here. But we were working this week, and this will be in print when One Accord comes out next week. But we were working on this One Accord article this week, and I thought it might be good to touch on a few of these items here as we come to the specifics. Questions that we received in the personal correspondence department over the past few weeks include things like this. Can you tell me if bread made with flour, water, salt, and sour culture would be considered unleavened bread? Some of you don't know what sour culture is, probably. What about some brands of salt and water that have sodium bicarbonate in them? Do we throw out toasters and toaster ovens because it's impossible to remove all their crumbs? Do we avoid laundry detergents, toothpaste, cat litter, and pet foods that contain baking soda? Do we put out everything made with brewer's yeast? Does kefir have to be put out? Some medicines, antacids, and even the fire extinguishers use leavening agents. Must they be put out? Since egg whites can make dough puff up, should they be put out? So there was a whole list of questions. That's just a small number of them. But let me read just a couple of paragraphs of our constructed answer, which several of us worked on. It isn't like you would give it in a sermon because it's an answer to these questions in article form. But let me read a couple of paragraphs of it for you. What was used in Bible times would be comparable to the sour culture referred to in the first question. Another name for it is sourdough starter. It indeed contains active yeast. But as we see from the modern dictionary definition, leaven also includes other products that add air to dough. Leaven includes active yeast, such as sourdough starter and baker's yeast, and chemical leavening agents, such as baking powder and baking soda. Other chemical leavening agents include sodium aluminum phosphate and potassium bicarbonate. Sodium bicarbonate, you're getting all this down right now. It'll all be in One Accord, but again, it's intended to be a broad general definition. I want you to understand that. You can get as picky and as detailed as you want to get, and some people just say, I'll put out the bread and the crackers and I'll forget everything else. Somewhere in between those two is probably the right spiritual approach, that you'll never get every last detail of leavening out, no matter how hard you try. You still should try, but the fact is you can't find everything that you might want to get rid of. Sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, is used to control pH balance and for other medical issues. When used in this manner, such chemicals are clearly not considered leavening agents. So if you've got medications with baking soda in it, they're not there for leavening. You're probably not going to go put your medicine in your dough, right? I assume you won't. When chemicals that are used in baking are used in other ways, such as toothpaste and cat litter, they are not what God intended his people put out to remember their affliction in Egypt. This does not mean that you can leave the box of baking soda that's used for keeping the refrigerator fresh, since, of course, it can be used to leaven bread. Beer is made with active yeast. However, after the fermentation process, the yeast is dead and therefore is no longer active yeast. That dead yeast residue left after the brewing process is called brewer's yeast, which is also added to soups and other foods as a flavoring agent and is used in some nutritional supplements. So again, you don't throw out everything that says brewer's yeast on it because it doesn't apply. Here we can quickly answer the host of questions about products that are not human food or bread and bread products, such as toothpaste, pet food, medicines, cat litter, salt, water, laundry detergents, antacids, fire extinguishers. None of these have to be put out. Some contain ingredients, typically baking soda, that could be leavening agents if they were used in conjunction with food or other chemicals. But they are used as binders in such items as medicines, salt, and antacids, not as agents to puff up in the process of making bread or other baked products. Bottled water may have sodium bicarbonate added to enhance the taste and add minerals, and it goes on from that. But you see the point. just because it has a particular label does not in every case mean it is leavening, and most of us wouldn't even be aware that it's leavening. And most of us probably wouldn't think to put out Coke or whatever other soda water we might happen to be drinking. Thank you, Susan. Susan just recently got a new Mac Air, and it is very nice to have one handy here, and she should keep it under lock and key. Very nice. Technology comes in handy once in a while. At any rate, we will have that. That will be in the One Accord article, and it's not intended to be an all definitive answer, but it probably is, because it covers the principles and the point that is being made about what is leavening and how to get rid of it, why to put it out. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 16, where I started to read verse 4. I want to come back here now to Deuteronomy 16, verse 4. We read in verse 3, you shall eat no leavened bread, 7 days, etc., that you may remember that you came out of Egypt. Verse 4, and no leaven shall be seen among you in all your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the meat which you sacrifice in the first day at twilight remain overnight until morning. You're talking about the Passover. So in this entire context of how to keep the holy days, he says, no leavening shall be seen among you in all your territory. Now, you and I can only control the territory that is ours, that we have ownership of. You can be standing, for that matter, on the side of your yard talking to your neighbor who's standing there eating a, what, Kit Kat bar. I don't know if they're leavened, but something, if he's taking a break. Thank you, Tatiana. That was nice. She at least smiled. Some people understand Kit Kat bars, I guess. The fact is, he wants us to get rid of what we have control of. Now, historically, that means we have cleaned our houses, including our kitchens, but also not just the leavened products that we might accidentally eat, but the leavening that is scattered around the house. Because, again, it's a type of putting sin out of our lives. It's a type of getting rid of those things that God says, don't let it be seen with you. And so if you've got a beat up sandwich under the couch cushion, that's got to go. It should anyway, whether it's unleavened bread or not. But if it's unleavened bread, you especially better get rid of it. But at any rate, the point is, we clean the house. Now, again, people go to extremes and they absolutely get down into every crack under the baseboard and nook and cranny of everything with a toothbrush. We clean our house very thoroughly before unleavened bread, because it's the only time it gets done. No. I'm kidding. We clean our house very thoroughly before unleavened bread, and I help, and Jeff helps, and we all do it as a family, because it's part of what we're doing to obey and serve God. Sorry, men, but if you haven't been helping at all with the de-leavening, maybe it's time to rethink that little process, and I'll leave that between you and your wife, now that I've meddled. But we clean the house thoroughly, but we especially go through the kitchen, the pantry, the storage places, the freezer, where you've often stuck something like, leftovers or wedding cake, some people do, muffins, things of that sort, and clean everything out. And it's hard to get it all. And I've had everything happen from finding something under the seat of the car, even after I cleaned it and vacuumed it, to finding, what are they? Tom's crackers in my golf bag. From 5 years ago when I played golf. But you can find any number of things during the days of unleavened bread that you overlooked. But the intent is to try not to overlook them, to try to get rid of them, to put them out. And the more we can do that, the more we are understanding the purpose and the intent of the days of unleavened bread, the more we're fulfilling God's command to not have leaven seen with us in all our quarters. So what you as church members should do, what I should do, what we all should do as God's people, is to think about what constitutes leavening, where is it in my house, where is it among my foodstuffs, where has it fallen or been carried or whatever, and then clean it up one room at a time or whatever until we get to the days of unleavened bread, at which time you throw it all out before the days of unleavened bread. You You get rid of it. You haul it away. You take it away. If your garbage comes on the right day, you're really well blessed. If it doesn't come on the right day, you might have to find a place to dump it. But you get rid of the leavening in your household and in your quarters. And we'll talk about some of the spiritual reasons for that when we come to that feast itself. If you don't know what leavening is, first of all, read the article and think about the principles, because we're not going to always give you specific answers. People will always call about certain things, and we'll try to give you answers if we know, but I'm not going to go to the encyclopedia and do your homework for you, even if it's in Carta. I'm not going to go look in the on the web to find out where what leavening is for you. But we do give you general guidelines and ask you to think about them in advance. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12. In other words, you need to know this information before the days of unleavened bread come. That's why I'm giving it to you now, so you have time to start. We've already started at our house, actually. We don't have nearly as much time this year. We usually start about 6 weeks in advance. And, of course, you start in the least used portions of the house. We started in our master bedroom closet, you know, and took everything out and cleaned and put it all back. Not necessarily because we think there's a lot of leavening in there or even a little bit of leavening in there, but because it's a place that's pretty obvious that you can clean and leave and it's not going to have leavening in it between now and the days of unleavened bread. And we gradually move everything toward the kitchen, and we keep all the leavening in the pantry or the kitchen. And, of course, at some point we have to take that out. Now, this year Judy's going to be making the Passover bread for us, and so the kitchen has to be de-leavened before she makes the Passover bread. The Passover bread can't have any leaven imposing on it, you know, can't be corrupted. And so the kitchen will have to be basically de-leavened before the Passover bread is made. So depending on your circumstances and situation, you should start consolidating your leavening. We usually end up in the last 4 or 5 days with all of it stacked on the kitchen counter. We all know where the leavening is. It's right there. And we're going to deal with it when the time comes. But in the meantime, we're not going to leave it in the cupboard, because we might need it for pancakes the day before Passover. You know, we're going to get it out there where we can look at it and where we can get rid of it when the time comes. Exodus chapter 12, again, verse 17. We read this, I think. So you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. Now, interesting here, the evening is in context, has to be understood as the beginning and the end of the period of days. Verse 19, for 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. And that's what we will do, and we will enjoy it. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. It'll be a matter of satisfaction of knowing that we are God's people, and he's called us out of Egypt, and that he has brought us out of Egypt, and that he has made us clean from the sin that so easily besets us. Let's conclude in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. There's a whole section here that we'll read later, but let's just read this one section to close here today. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. That's what we're trying to do when it comes to unleavened bread. We're purging out the old leaven, that we may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. See, we're unleavened spiritually by the forgiveness through Christ. He goes on to say, for indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now he introduces the spiritual principle of getting rid of spiritual leaven and taking in spiritual unleavened bread. And we'll cover that as we get to those days. I hope it's helpful when it comes to getting ready for the days of unleavened bread to at least have had this brief review.